my job is really to make things understandable to people, whether it's something super technical or even simplistic, but make it in a way that resonates with people so that they understand. I'm talking about often, a lot of times, the fear and anxiety that people go through and how to overcome a lot of them.
Most hosts never achieve the results they hoped for. They're falling short on listenership and monetization, meaning their message isn't being heard and their show ends up costing them money. This podcast was created to help you grow your listenership and make money while you're at it. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with another episode of POP, the podcast on podcasting. And today we're swimming with sharks. We're swimming with the Kenneth Shark Kinney in the house. I should have here we go. Kenneth in the house. Thank you. How you doing, man?
Doing well. How about yourself? Long time no talk to.
Long time no talk. Yeah, we met on Clubhouse. I've avoided Clubhouse, not because I wanted to, but because our clients, we have a lot of clients and we have just been needing to serve them at a high level. And you've been swimming with the sharks.
Wait.
Literally.
Work Trump social media?
I don't know how to answer that. Social media is super duper important.
Yeah.
But when you're busy and you're training new staff just to keep up with the workload, you can't maybe do both. And so my goal is within the next 6 weeks, I want to be able to be 5 hours a week on Clubhouse. So we've brought on so many different clients. Yes, that is true too. But we've brought on so many different teammates. And so we've grown the team huge, more than doubled the team. And that's going to be able to support me to be able to do it.
Yeah. We need that applause again.
Yeah. Wrong button. So, Kenneth, Shark, as they call you, you've got a podcast and you've been swimming with sharks for a while and you're a speaker. You speak all over. And I loved something that you mentioned to me is just while we were kind of shooting the breeze before we started recording. You mentioned that one of the things that you do is when you're speaking and going around and doing your job, you try to create it to be fun as well. So like anytime you can speak in Florida, you it so that you can go and swim with the sharks. So I want you to start out here. Why did you start your podcast? That's the main question I want to have. What's the why behind the why for you starting a podcast? And if you wouldn't mind adding on top of that, just your process for starting that first show.
Sure. So about 75 years ago when I was young, I started on the radio and I was doing sports talk in a small market 100 years ago, what feels like 100 years ago anyway. And so I did that for years, got out of it, and then had a normal working career. And in between a couple of stints in that working career, I was a public speaker. I spoke at colleges, universities all over the country for several years, kind of got out of it, back into some family duties with a father that ended up passing away, then got back into media again, was on TV and radio here in the local market, and also produced a show that was seen all over the world years ago. And I took that radio show, this is about a decade ago, and I took the radio show and I repurposed it as a podcast. And so it was fun. You started playing around with what bumper music you could use on the radio and all the fun music you couldn't, and you're still interviewing guests. And it was fun ways to repurpose content a decade ago. So I did that for quite a while and then took another pause when another parent, my mom, got sick and passed away. So as I was itching after my kind of got through that period of my life as when she was gone and settled, I was itching to get back into radio and had the opportunity to go back into it. But I really wanted to figure out a way to grow specifically what I wanted to do without necessarily beholding to a lot of advertisers or focused only on the money aspect. I knew I had a message that I wanted to try to get out there with better forms of marketing, advertising, customer experience, that kind of business acumen that I had learned and been able to fail at many times before and recite some better ways of doing it. And I was well connected to quite a few people in the marketing and advertising industry just from being a speaker. And so I started leveraging some of those relationships to come on my podcast, and the name of the podcast, it's called A Shark's Perspective. My nickname since I was a little kid is Shark. I've been swimming and diving with sharks since I saw a great white in the water, well before even I started my first radio show. So it's something I've actively been doing, either scuba diving or free diving with sharks for a long, long time, for many decades now.
So is it even safe? I know this isn't about your podcast, but is it even safe to like free dive with sharks, or do you need to be in one of those protected, like what
it those cages.
Looks like a jail cell?
Yeah. So the cages are good when you're with, I typically say a great white because of where the waters are. I mean, any shark is generally going to be the apex predator wherever they are. Most sharks, a great majority of them, are not intent on attacking anyone. What they can do is confuse you for food. And what happens in particular with great whites is because of where they approach from deep surfaces down below, when you see them coming up, like in the silly Jaws picture, you're in very generally murkier water. They're in much colder water than, say, a tiger shark or a bull shark, which is typically going to be in clearer water. As typically, bulls are going to be in a lot of brackish water. They can actually live in rivers, too. They can breathe salt water, air, and regular oxygen from a freshwater lake. But when you're in a murkish water environment, you have to be careful because the impact of an attack is easily going to kill you. I mean, the jaw force, the bite force of any shark is astounding. Sharks are generally only behind saltwater crocodiles as far as the level of bite force that they have from their jaws. And so in that kind of environment, when you think, say, California waters or South Africa, or even some waters in Australia where it's not clear, you really need to be in a cage. But 99% of the time, even with large sharks like tiger sharks, great hammerheads, and bull sharks, you can swim with them in the water. You do have to be most careful of bull sharks because they, one, have the most testosterone of any animal on the planet, and they are extremely inquisitive, which is part of the problem that they cause what a lot of people believe are the most bites. They're often mistaken for great whites, but they hunt close to shore. They unfortunately bite a lot of tourists in the water. Not a lot. You don't see it that many people bitten. You see people that are scared because of the hype of sharks, but there's much more chances of being killed by a lightning or a coconut, for that example. More cows attack people than sharks every year. That's what's how ridiculous a lot of the hype and hysteria has been around it. But in a clear water environment, if you know how to read a shark, it's somewhat like body language, how they may arch their back or their pectoral fin, how they position themselves at you. You can swim with sharks pretty easily and deflect them out of the way. Again, you have to respect their territory, but if you know shark behavior, it can really save your life in that kind of environment. I'm not walking around with Cheetos and some barbecue sauce in my hands either. I don't tempt and play with sharks. I'm very respectful in their environment, but most of that fear is strictly what people make up in their brains. And a lot of that is caused by this great movie that was made almost 50 years ago that scared the crap out of everybody. So Steven Spielberg took a mechanical shark and created a lot of hype and hysteria. Now, again, they are apex predators like any other wild animal. You have to respect them and their territory. But that was probably more than you needed to know about sharks, but I can talk about it for hours and hours.
It is pretty interesting, and I could have hundreds of questions just from what you shared. I am just curious, though, with you being a speaker as well, being called Shark ever since you were very young. Curious, you mentioned South Africa, you mentioned California, we've talked about Florida, and I think there's probably sharks practically everywhere. I'm just curious if you make it a point of traveling to new places just to kind of visit all the sharks. Has that been a thing for you as well?
Absolutely. No, I mean, I have my favorite spots depending on where there is good shark activity. I love going to the Bahamas. Bahamas doesn't have a ton of great whites. What they have is a government that does a really good job of protecting sharks. And so you can find a really abundant population. Cayman Islands has some even prettier waters, which is hard to believe because the waters in the Bahamas and Exumas and Bimini are absolutely breathtaking. But there's so many more sharks, for example, in that area that I find it more fun more often to go there. But Jupiter, Florida, in that area of Florida and in the Gulf, depending on where and when the water's clean, are some of the best waters to go to. There's a lot of Galapagos sharks in Hawaii that you can see. There are a lot of tiger sharks both in Hawaii and on the east coast of Florida. There's a lot of those areas that are great. When I travel, and I lived in Brazil for a while, I dove there a lot, depending on where you go. It's fun, but you almost take in as much culture time as you do water time. I mean, the water, except for a little bit of the how clear the water is and maybe a couple of different fish, water's water. Yeah. So the water looks different in the Bahamas than it does in LA. But at the same time, you're there to experience LA versus a tropical island or vice versa. But I always try to weave that in to answer your earlier question. I always try when I speak, whether I'm speaking here in the country or I'm speaking out of the country, is if I can arrive a day early, try to get a dive in. It relaxes me. It's my happy place, is being in the water. And once I do that, it's sort of my ADHD pill, if you will.
I apologize to the listener right now. This is so fascinating. I apologize to the listener. If you're like, all I want to know is how to become a better podcaster. Yeah. Adam Adams, I'm just being curious about some stuff I've never experienced before. So I am going to ask a few more questions.
Yeah. Sorry about that.
On this. No, I love it. I think it's interesting because part of why I have you and just a variation of other podcasters on the show is just to show all the different kinds of shows that there are, the different reasons behind starting a podcast, if it's for business, if it's for pleasure, if it's to prove a point, if it's to leave a legacy, whatever it is, I think that it's interesting that there's so many different perspectives on why to start a podcast.
Well, let me answer your earlier question then that goes with kind of the why. So when you think of the process of how I look at it, a lot of people are still afraid to get behind the mic. They're afraid to commit and go all in on a podcast. I don't deal with anxiety like a lot of people. When you swim with sharks, your biggest concern is not whether or not your hair looks good or how are people going to judge you on social or things like that. That doesn't really mean anything to me. I don't walk into the water with fear. And I think for the same example, I have no problem with asking you or Seth Godin or anybody to be on my show that's some big, massive name. So I think a lot of people are very hesitant about jumping all in to even with doing a podcast. I'm amazed by the number of people today that are still like, I'm thinking about doing it, but I'm not certain. So really, at least for me, it's not having the fear to hold you back from doing like that. Do I have the perfect voice? No, not at all. Am I the perfect host of all time? Absolutely not. I do me, and that's what I do, and have a little fun with it. I only talk about sharks for about 2 seconds on the show, maybe when people refer to me as shark, and then I ask them a silly question towards the end about sharks. But 99% of it is about business, marketing, advertising, customer experience, and things like that.
Okay. So that answers a question that I had in mind on a shark's perspective. For the most part, it's not about what did they call that? Shark Tank. Have you heard of Shark Tank?
Yeah.
People at different events, they'll do like mini Shark Tanks as well, mm-hmm. where they kind of pitch businesses, and where it's a lot about maybe the host in my mind could be somebody who is more of a venture capitalist or what's angel investor, that type of stuff. Or it could be all about sharks. So
it's very rarely generally about sharks.
Okay. Got it. But you know, it's what I like about you and your experience is from what I've shared, and you might have learned this over time being a speaker, I love how you find a way in your stories to bring it back to the listener each and every time. I've noticed that in the last couple of few minutes that we've been spending on this podcast, that frequently you might share a story about one country that you visited or one type of shark that you saw up close and personal, but you tend to find a way to make it also benefit the listener. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And I think that's so critical. That's such a wonderful takeaway from this episode so far, is most of us are never going to swim with a shark. Like, we probably want to. It's probably on our bucket list. But I will probably have to say less than 1 of 1,000 people are actually going to swim.
It's less than that, yeah.
With a shark.
Yeah.
And so with that said, it's very beneficial for the other 999 plus that we have the ability to hear from you, share an experience about not being worried about starting a podcast, not being worried about getting in the water with the shark, and not worrying about your hair, etc.
Not worrying about failing.
Yeah.
And how others might judge you.
And putting that into the perspective of, hey, I might not be swimming with a shark, but he helped me understand and visualize what it's like to swim with sharks and what it's like to be afraid and not afraid. And not only that sounds scary, and now it's silly that I'm afraid to start a podcast almost. You do a good job of that.
I probably thank you. I really appreciate that. I'm also thinking through this as I'm writing a book and getting near to finish a book that's based on, I'm really tapping into my own stories, if you will, to think of that. I use a lot of metaphors and analogies that I draw upon my experience in the water. For example, hammerhead sharks, the way that they have the Quasimodo look and the way their eyes are positioned on the side of their heads, they look at the world that I tend to when they're in the water. For example, you may not see sharks, but for the most part, if they're there, they're going to see you. Their vision's better. And if you think of a hammerhead shark, how they can see in basically 360 degrees, that allows me, that I apply in my own form of business. I've worked as a publisher. I've worked as a solopreneur and entrepreneur. I've worked on the agency side. I've worked on a brand side multiple times. And so I take all of those perspectives. And I have a nickname named Shark, and that's why I call the show what I do. And that's how I really approach business, is to try to take a more holistic view. And so I use a lot of the metaphors and analogies of my own life, whether it's me swimming with sharks or some of what I went through when my mom got sick and passed away. I mean, these are things that we all draw upon that make us who we are. And it doesn't have to be anything else other than just telling your own story in your own way.
I have another question for you on if this is the case or not for your podcast. Are you, in a way, vetting people that you might be putting money with on your show? Or, like, is that perception of shark and Shark Tank and venture capital angel investor, is that not part of the show? Just the reason I ask is I wonder if the listener's thinking that right now.
If whether or not I'm charging people to be on the show?
Well, that's another question that you should just answer.
Well, no, I don't at all. That I have not asked.
But I mean, a shark's perspective could be construed as you're a venture capitalist looking to deploy capital in other people's deals, businesses.
Fair enough. I have been an investor before, but I don't look at it that way. The way I look at the world, especially from a business standpoint, but also how I look at my own family. My nickname happens to be Shark, and it's the many views of the world that I can take upon from career experience and all the failures I've had that I'm more than happy to acknowledge, because it's made me a better business leader and a better dad and everything else. I mean, it's those kind of things that have shaped my life, and that's why. So is it fair for somebody to think that? Absolutely, but that's not my driver.
So I want to take a second just to find out what you get out of having a podcast, why you started it. I think we got a little bit of that. We understand your progression, but what do you really get out of having your show each and every day?
Good point. Good question. So one, I get to think through a lot of things that I maybe don't. And I learned that not that long ago, that I did an interview show, this show, and nearly 300 episodes right now into this current show. And when I was going through the first, 100, you blaze through them, you get excited, but I don't know that I necessarily thought through my level of understanding or expertise in any one of those fields. And I would talk with different thought leaders in each of these different verticals. Turns out I knew more than I thought I knew about some of the topics. Some I learned a lot from, but what it allowed me to do is it gave me sort of a thinking space to really gain my own level of expertise. And having worked for a brand for several times, I really needed to make certain that I needed to have that street credibility as a marketer, for example, before I was giving anybody a ton of marketing advice. Because just like we were talking prior to this, there's so many bad coaches and consultants out there that are giving advice that they don't know if it really works or not. This was sort of a research ground for me. I'm doing the same thing now. I'm actually working on this book, and it's allowing me to think through some of the topics in some of my own sort of neurotic open forum that I just happened to record and then repost as a podcast. So that's one. Two, it's a great way to continue to build that community and put out some level of information that people will correspond with, that resonates with them. Three, I've developed some great relationships. I've already known a lot of the people that have been on my show. It's given me a chance to really continue to build that. Four, honestly, I monetize my podcast now. And so that level of additional income stream is worth a lot, especially that grew during the pandemic. But in digital brands, or when brands didn't have anywhere to go in person to spend that money, and they started looking at these digital assets where they could put some dollars, it made a lot of sense to pour money into shows like mine that provide that, that have had the level of guests that I've had that are recognizable names. And five, it's just something that I can be proud of. I do every interview on every show with someone. And then at the end, after I ask my little silly questions, we talk about sharks for 30 seconds. At the end, I fade to music, but then I have sort of three key takeaways that I explain, almost like my Cliff Notes version. And so a lot of times, again, allows me to think through a lot of that understanding and make it more relatable. And as a speaker, my job is really to make things understandable to people, whether it's something super technical or even simplistic, but make it in a way that resonates with people so that they understand. I'm not here just talking about sharks and their first or second dorsal fin. I'm not even talking about diving with sharks. I'm talking about often, a lot of times, the fear and anxiety that people go through and how to overcome a lot of that. That's been a lot of it. But that's sort of a roundabout answer, but that's probably four or five things I can be proud of is what I produce for my show.
That's really, really good. You mentioned that you are making money through the podcast. Yeah. You're monetizing. How are you monetizing it right now?
So I do an ad read for two different brands that I've known and worked with for years, been great friends and big fans. I don't want to bring on brands that I haven't had some experience with, that I can really put my heartfelt interest into saying, I don't ever want to rubber stamp as an influencer what's good for my audience. I want to make certain that they know that I'm a sincere believer in these products or services. So yeah, that's been a way for me to do it. I have not really ever gone into the CPM read. I've got a friend who's got a great show, and I listen to some of the weird advertisements that just get randomly inserted in there, and they're so clunky and weird. And I don't know that anybody loves advertisements ever, but at least they know that if it comes from me, even if it's just one person who hears it, if they know me and they respect my knowledge, have that relationship with me, at least they know that I trust these brands. So maybe that level helps coordinate some level of trust with them.
Yeah. I want to interject just for the listener, just because what you mentioned, I remember when I was recording episode number 30 of this podcast, it was completely focused on what you're talking about, the different types of monetizing strategies, the pros of them and the cons, because there's pros to each and every one. And you hit the nail on the head on a couple of the cons from having that CPM model. I call it the advertisers. You also have sponsors, which is totally different, in my opinion, from advertisers. So if you're listening and you're wanting to know what's the difference between sponsors and advertisers, and what does he mean about these CPMs and the bogus, non-related recorded ads that come into a podcast when you do it that way, go and listen to that. It's about 25, 30 minutes long, and it'll help you to be able to monetize your show a lot, lot better. It's just episode 30 of this podcast, podcast on podcasting.
Well, and you know, if you do an advertising show where you typically have an insertion point where some ad network puts one in, you might get $5-$10 if you've got an audience of 1,000 people, maybe $25, but that's...
And most people don't have an audience of 1,000.
No, most of them are much less than 1,000.
Average is like around 100. And so like that's putting you at 20 cents every time this ad comes on. And it's like, anyway, we won't go into it too much. Episode 30, you're definitely going to want
to listen to that. You convinced me.
Awesome. So, all right. So I also wondered, do you do coaching and consulting? You mentioned that there's a lot of coaches and consultants that don't seem to practice what they preach or maybe even know the results that happen. So I'm curious, it sounds almost like one of the ways that you could monetize your show is being a coach and consultant and learning your craft better through the podcast.
Yeah. So I do some consulting. I don't typically do coaching. I've been asked to do it before, but it's a little bit more of a time suck because I work for an agency as well. Fantastic agency called AI Media Group. They do an amazing advertising agency. But at the same time, my side hustle, if you will, is a little bit of the consulting and podcast work that I do. One of the biggest problems with a lot of the coaches that are out there is there's a very sort of, I don't know if I've referenced this the right way, it's a very, you've got B2B and you've got B2C. And then right now there's a lot of, especially on Clubhouse, a lot of B2Me, which I tried to buy. Somebody else had bought that, but I like that name. There's a lot of, how do you grow your Instagram following? That's great advice for you, Adam, on some coach giving you that advice, and that's great. If you're working for any kind of brand whatsoever, it's the worst advice you've probably ever heard in your life if you're with a B2C or B2B brand. And so if you're strictly working as an influencer or as an independent coach or consultant, a lot of times that advice is okay, but it's not necessarily, they're not investing in a lot of brand trust, and that's part of a personal branding problem that if you're working for large brands, they invest a lot of time, the good ones do, into building trust. And that's left out with a lot of influencers when it's kind of like, just grow your audience so you can hold up a product. And I'm not trying to damn influencers because...
No, this is a really interesting way to look at it. And I'm glad you're going into it.
If I have one person that trusts me versus 100,000 followers that sees me hold up a can of Coke, I'm more interested in that one because that one's going to lead to a sale. The other 100 that are going to look at me holding up a can of Coke is not going to, in all likelihood, sell a can of Coke for the company that I'm sponsoring. And so a lot of times, a lot of that just becomes about them growing their following. And again, it's not meant to damn them because there's a lot of great ones out there that do this well. But there's a little bit of a lack right now in, I'm going to call it servant leadership in marketing, and it becomes a little too me-centered as opposed to whatever product or service that a lot of the influencers agree to represent. And having worked with a lot of influencers when I was on the brand side as well, I saw the same problem. It became more simply leveraged strictly for their benefit as opposed to the brands they were supposed to represent.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to have a transactional relationship with an influencer, for example. And this all ties back to a lot of the coaches and consultants. A lot of that advice I sometimes find to be amiss from what really happens in the real world outside of just your own Instagram channel or your own Twitter following or your own Facebook, whatever it is. We've gotten in a weird place of chasing followers as opposed to delivering value. And I don't know if I'm articulating that correctly, but I'm sure you see it as well, especially as you continue to grow your business like you're killing it right now.
I love that, chasing followers instead of chasing value. Interesting way to put that. Thank you. And so the next question that I was wondering, I was really curious about you when you speak. Who do you represent when you're speaking? What do you speak on? It sounds like you do it a lot. I mean, just in the next few weeks, it sounds like you got like 4 different speaking gigs happening.
Yeah. So thank God.
In person, which is freaking awesome. Now that COVID's kind of out the door-ish, I hate, knock on wood, right? When you're speaking, who are you representing and what do you speak about?
So if I'm speaking about marketing or advertising ever, and it's generally on representation of the agency that I work for. If it's anything, for example, maybe I'm doing a keynote about overcoming fear and I use the stories of shark diving, for example, then that's when I'm representing me. I'm always respectful of the brand that pays me as a W-2 first. That's the line that I draw to make certain that I owe them. They've been a fantastic partnership that I've had with them for years, friends as well. But depending on what kind of topic that I'm talking about, if it's a leadership topic, I can float either way, but I have to really be respectful of what drives value for them versus what drives value for me. And as long as I can, I've turned down a lot of paid speaking gigs to give a even free gig on behalf of my agency so that I make certain that I deliver value for them, whether it's a new client relationship or just an SEO opportunity or whatever it is, so that they're recognized for thought leadership. So that's a little bit of a, like a lot of people, I have also a different personal brand. Half the people know me as Shark, in a Shark's perspective, half the people know me as Kenneth Kenny, but I'm able to leverage my own personal brand to grow these speaking opportunities for both sides of the house, if you will.
Yeah. Well, you and I, we spent quite a bit of time just in getting to know each other even before we started recording. And so I actually have a hard stop here in a couple of minutes. I want to mention one of the things that you said that I loved. It's something you do on your podcast, and it is the three key takeaways.
Yeah.
And it's something that I try to do on my podcast, and I think it does benefit me, absolutely. And I think it supports the listener who may be driving or working out, and they can't really take notes, and they got a piece of value, but it's almost like at the end of the podcast, if they can be reminded of that value, it seems to really support their growth. And I believe that they're more likely to actually take action and to take that next step into what they need. And so I think that that was a really good takeaway in and of itself. And it's something that I constantly am doing.
It's the most time consuming thing that I do on my podcast.
Yeah.
I really have to think through that like it's its own story. It's like writing a blog as opposed to jumping on a half hour conversation.
Yeah. That does make sense. It does take a little bit of time and effort. I've never thought of it as the most time consuming, but I do it during the recording while you're in front of me.
Yeah.
Are you doing it separately?
I do it separately if I edit out my ums and ahs.
Okay.
But I'll give you an example. I use this with Seth Godin. So Seth was show 200 for me on my current show. And I think Seth is absolutely brilliant. He's one of the most well-known names in all of marketing and business. He's written like 20 bestsellers. He's made $1 billion. He's a brilliant speaker. I don't agree with everything he says, and I want people to keep an open mind. I didn't say that he was wrong, but at the end of my three key takeaways, and I kind of noticed it when I was doing it with him, I said, you know, you don't have to agree with everything he said about X. I don't even remember what it was and probably what he said, but he articulates stuff so well. And so basically, I try to put my own articulation on a point more than necessarily dispute or agree with anything. Just try to explain it in my own way.
Love it. And so with you, you mentioned how you monetize your podcast. Is there's a couple of brands that you know, like, and respect, and you've known for a long time, and you'll read ads for them. Another thing is you mentioned you do a little bit of consulting, and that there's a difference between coaching and consulting, and you prefer being more of the consultant when you do that. Talked about speaking, and one big takeaway literally is being able to make your business and your life come together when you're traveling for speaking gigs and things like that, where you can still swim with sharks. Or for me, it's mountain biking. I get invited to do something, I'm like, I'm bringing my mountain bike and I'm going to play the first day, and then I'll do the mastermind, or then I'll do my speaking gig. And then the next thing that I'll mention is you talked about chasing followers instead of chasing value. And the difference is we're becoming influencers by having a podcast, et cetera, that we need to be really considering if we're doing all this to be like me, 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 or if we're doing this to add value to the world. And I really believe that putting out those thoughts of we should be outwardly facing, we should be focused on others, we should be lifting others. And I always forget, I think it's Zig Ziglar. If you help enough other people get what they want, if you're adding value to other people, you're fine. You're going to get everything in life that you want. And ending with the three key takeaways. How does the listener find you, Kenneth, and get a hold of you other than the Shark's Perspective, which is already in the show notes?
Yeah. So A Shark's Perspective is my website. That's the podcast. You can find me on LinkedIn or most of the social channels, depending on the time of week or month that I may be less active than others. I'm generally most active on LinkedIn at Kenneth Kenny, KENNETHKINNEY, or you'll see me out on the speaking circuit. All you really have to do is look for a shark above the water, sometimes below, whenever I can get to the beach.
Great to have you. I'll let you go. Bye for now. This episode is brought to you by GrowYourShow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, GrowYourShow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.